And last, and I have to use the cliched phrase, last but definitely not least, Dr. Norman Brown. Come on up. Dr. Norman Brown has one PhD from Stanford and another from Union Institute, as well as a license in marriage and family therapy. And he teaches psychology at the Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University in Florida. His involvement with naltrexone stems from the fact that his 16-year-old daughter has an incurable and rare connective tissue disorder for which he has managed to generate a clinical trial with researchers from the National Institutes of Health, which will begin next year. He seized the opportunity that our public meeting presented to organize an international research meeting on naltrexone that took place just yesterday at Rutgers University, with the explicit goal of promoting the integration of naltrexone research into a scientific medical force for better treatments in the near future. And he's here to give you an overview of what happened yesterday.
Well, I think you've heard a lot of that overview, because two of those people were Dr. Cerrone and Dr. Mir, who I picked up at the airport and took to that meeting. In the tried and true tradition of people that take this podium, I want to say a little bit about my own path to this work and a dream. I have a dream. My path did come from my now 16-year-old daughter, who started to have terrible pain and occasional joint dislocation when she was 10 years old, and she's going to turn 17 the day after I get back. And she's bedridden about 22 hours a day. She has Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, hypermobility type. And I thought, when I saw Lorenzo's oil, well, maybe a guy like me with some research skill, even though he's a psychologist, could contribute it in some way to finding some sort of treatment for her disease. There's no treatments for this disease except long-acting narcotics, and then you get constipation and all that other stuff. So my field is love. I've written a textbook on love relations, and I'm now writing a book on an emotional theory of love, and I chose Jaak Panksepp, who's the founder of affective neuroscience, to be my mentor for understanding the neuroscience of the emotions, not so much the neuroscience of love — that tends to be an abbreviation of what love really is — but the neuroscience of emotions. It turns out Jaak Panksepp is probably being kept alive by low-dose naltrexone with terminal lung cancer. He suggested to me about a year ago that I look into low-dose naltrexone, possibly for my daughter's Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. I looked into it, got more and more interested, but then about 6 months later, yet another doctor in my hometown of Daytona Beach said, oh, well, it's hopeless, she's only going to get worse. And my wife communicated that to me over the phone, and I started crying, and I said, all right, I got to go on naltrexone now. Got to do it now. So I called up Nazlı McDonald, Turkish-born NIH researcher, who I'd gotten my daughter Hannah into the research project on her disease with, and I convinced her in about 10 minutes that naltrexone might be a good bet for a clinical trial for people with hypermobility type Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, because in its progressive state, it looks almost exactly like fibromyalgia. And she thought that was a good idea. Well, she's the third person that came to the conference yesterday. I found a phenomenon that I've been hearing. I started hearing it at dinner last night. My wife has seen it in me for months, and she hates it. I would call it love at first hope. When we start to have hope for a disease that we haven't had hope for before, and the hope comes through naltrexone, we fall in love with naltrexone. I actually heard my first telephone interview with Dr. Bahari. I saw that this man is still in love with naltrexone after 20 years. So a marriage with naltrexone does seem to be possible. I think that's good. I think what a lot of us are hoping for is that we can form a marriage between our hopes and medical research. And I think it's typical of males involved in the dating and mating dance that we want to get into bed as soon as possible. This is my research area is love. This has to do with certain anxiety we have about whether we're going to be sexually competent and stuff like that. And so we're trying to get the researchers into bed with us as soon as possible, get them to consummate with us and get them to agree that naltrexone is the answer to all of our problems. And researchers are like the diffident female who's wants to let's stick her for a while, you know, let's do this thing right, let's get to know each other a little bit, you know, and we need more research, you know. So basically we need more research. Well, we want to go to bed right away. And I think that's productive of a lot of the tension that we find between ourselves and medical researchers. Now I proceed to my dream. My dream was, I had two dreams the morning that I started to drive up here from Florida. That was Wednesday morning. But the first one was the most beautiful one to me. My favorite way of leisure and enjoyment and uplift is to go backpacking into the high mountains, preferably the Sierra Nevadas in California, where I'm originally from. In this particular dream, I was driving around the periphery of the Sierra Nevadas. I was looking for a place to go backpacking into the high mountains, and I wanted to do this alone because I love the solitude, I love the uplift, the spiritual experience when I'm alone in the mountains. And I couldn't seem to find any place where there weren't a lot of people going into the mountains, and there were these big canyons going in with beautiful lakes in them. And I finally got a hold of a ranger, and I said, look, here was another trailer full of horses, and they were going up this trail, and I'd really like to go up a place where I won't find any people and I can be by myself up towards the top of the range. And he was talking with me, and I suddenly got a vision of the whole range. Now, if you know the Sierra Nevadas, they're a long mountain range, about 50 miles wide, 300 miles long, or something like that. This image was a round mountain range, and every valley was a different pathway to the same top of the mountain range. This was the spiritual mountain. All pathways were going to lead to the top. They were going to lead to the same top. I think all of the pathways that we're pursuing, this was a spiritualized version of what we're doing here, but all pathways are proceeding to the same top of the mountain. Bhakti love, the love of a drug, the love of people that are being bettered by a drug, that's one of the pathways. Research is another pathway. All of these pathways will lead to the top of the mountain. They're all full of their own mud and their own grime and their own lakes and their own cliffs to climb. They all lead to the top of the same mountain. That was a very nice image for me. And also that I didn't need to go alone to have my uplift, that perhaps it could be, I could see lots of people, some on horseback, some in wheelchairs, some backpacking like me, some perhaps landing by helicopter, and we could all get to the top of the mountain together. So that was a very positive image I had for this conference. Now, you've met two of the people that were there at the conference, Dr. Mir and Dr. Gironi. The other two that were presenting, oh my God, were Dr. Sarkar, who is a basic researcher and has done some naltrexone research on the immune system. The complexity that he could add to our simplistic views of beta endorphin in the immune system was astounding, and it went way over my head. But I'm going to have to write the summary of this conference. I have it all on videotape, so I have some help doing that. And the fourth person was Dr. McDonald, who was my contact person at NIH, who is experiencing difficulty in getting NIH to buy into a trial. But basically what I decided to do with her was to provide her with a bunch of case studies, half a dozen case studies of people that have EDS3, Ehlers-Danlos hypermobility type, that would be tested for their beta endorphin levels in blood by Dr. Sacerdoti in Milan. And we would then present her, in a year or so it's going to take her to get that trial going, we would present her with, here's a basic tentative map of what you can expect from naltrexone when you treat EDS3 with it. She will then use that map to design her clinical trial. The same, I think, needs to be done with fibromyalgia because of the similarity between the two, and I'm seeking doctors and patients to work on doing that and sending the data from fibromyalgia to Milan. Also, the Milan group has done the study of fibromyalgia and found it to be low in beta endorphin, but they haven't done a trial of naltrexone, and they're willing to do it if we can send them enough solid case studies that show the terrain, show what it looks like and how it will probably work. Sort of rather than going into a lot of details with the conference, the main thing I got out of it is that naltrexone's action on different diseases may be quite different, and each one of those may produce a different disease model and different naltrexone action model. That these models of naltrexone action will actually productively fructify each other. They will challenge each other to be better. They will fructify each other. They will all be pathways to the top of the mountain. These disease models are alcoholism, which Dr. Sarkar has been studying, multiple sclerosis, two different types of multiple sclerosis, the progression, the nervous system progression, and the relapsing, and then fibromyalgia and AIDS and Crohn's disease, at least. We could get that many different disease models and naltrexone action models. Yes, that's a lot of research. They're all pathways to the top of the mountain. Thank you.